Okay, so we are holding on some Dalet Amud Beis, about 10 lines from the bottom, Lamed and Zahari. Okay. We learned yesterday in the Mishnah that if a person lent money to somebody else, he's not allowed to then go and live in his chotzer for free, because that would be similar to ribis. And we discussed yesterday at the very end over there, are we talking about when they made this arrangement to begin with, or are we talking about even if they made it after the fact, that later on, after at some point after he lent him money, he starts living over there. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to tell a case that's going to bear on this issue. Rav Yosef bar Chama, Takif Avdi D'Inshi, Rav Yosef bar Chama, he was the father of Rava, Takif Avdi D'Inshi D'Masik Bohuzuzi, he would grab a hold of Avadim Knanim, that is, of people who owed them, who owed him money, V'Avid Bahu Avidda, and he would have these Avadim do work for him, during times when otherwise these Avadim are not otherwise occupied. But he would take this over, so if he had previously lent money to somebody, that person now owed him, he would take that person's eved during a slack season and make him do work for him.
Maybe he was working more than what the money
did. Amalei Rava Brei, so Rava, Rav Yosef Ahama's son asks him, my time over my office, why are you doing like that? Which, on the face of it, there could be two potential problems. There could be Gezel, and there could be Ribbis. So why are you doing it? How is this allowed? Gezel, because he's taking somebody else's eved and using him without permission. Amalei, Hanokir of Nachman, really. So Rav Yosef Achama tells him, yes, but I'm doing this because I hold like Rav Nachman, the Amar of Nachman, Avdu Nahoim Kresi Leshabi. Rav Nachman says an eved is not even worth the amount of food that it takes to fill up his stomach. Meaning, in other words, an Eved's work is basically not really worth very much. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef Achama says, on the contrary, when you get down to it, when I take these Avadim and make them do work for me, I'm feeding them. In that case, it's not Gezel, it's not Ribbis. I'm losing more than these guys aren't losing anything. The owners are gaining something. They don't have to, the owner doesn't have to feed them that day. On the lay, so Rabbi tells him, Rav Nachman had said that an eved is not even worth the amount it takes to feed him. His work is worth very little. So therefore, Rav Yosef Achama argues, I'm not really taking away anything from them. I'm feeding them. An eved's work is not worth the amount. Fine, you know what you could say Rav Nachman was talking about is somebody like, for example, he's speaking from experience. He's speaking, for example, about his own Eved named Dori, Demarked Beikovi. This Dori didn't really do much. He didn't do much work. He was... He's using that as an example. The Maukid Beikuri, this Dori, Rashi says, late son Haya, he was a silly guy. And he would dance around in taverns and bars in order to that people would give him drinks. So therefore, on that basis, Rav Nachman can be saying that fine, an Eved like that, you're right, the amount you feed him is worth more than any work you're getting out of it. Okay, that's the question. Avdi Achrinimi Omar. Fine, he said, who says he's talking about other Avadim? Amalei, so Rav Yosef tells him, fine. Anoki holder of Daniel Baraftina Omaravs, really. Fine, but I can also be holding like what Rav Daniel Baraftina said in the name of Rav, the Omar, that he says, Hatokif Abde Shachavera Ba'asaba Malacha, if somebody grabs a hold of somebody else's Eved, Knani, and has him do work for him, Potter. Then he's Potter from having to pay for it. The Nichalei de la Nisteri Abde, because the other person is benefiting from the fact that his Eved should not be Nisteri. Now, what is Nisteri? Rashi says that it's basically the root of the word is the word Sar, which means like a leader or a chief or whatever. As a Nisteri is like the reflexive form of that. He shouldn't feel himself like a Sar. He shouldn't feel himself like a lord or something. He should be made to work. Tosfos quotes from the Aruch that it's Meloshon Stira, that he'll get ruined if he's either way, the point is that by having the Eved work, the owner is benefiting. So therefore, now this is the idea. We started talking yesterday, we talked also back in Bava Kamma, about Zenen of Zelay Choser. Now on the face of it, when you have an Eved do work for you, granted, okay, on the one hand, it's
not yours.
Right, but that's what we're talking about. On the one hand, okay, the owner wasn't using him for anything else at that time, so in that sense, there's no Choser. On the other hand, of course, you know, when the Eved does work, it does take away some energy from him. So in that case, he is chaser. However, Rav Yosef Bar Chama is arguing based on the statement of Rav Daniel Bar Ktina that that is offset by the fact that the owner is gaining in return the fact that his eved is not learning to be idle, that he's learning that there's always work to be done. So therefore, it comes out basically Zenan of Zalei Chaser, and in that case, it should be fine. So there's no issue of Gezel involved.
Well, maybe that learning is worth something.
What learning?
The eved is learning not to be.
Well, okay, whatever. The point is, the master is not losing out from it. Okay, Amalei, so Rava tells him, fine, that takes care of the Gezel problem.
He's losing out because he could be paid for that.
Who could be paid for that?
The owner of the eved.
Zenen of Zalei Chaser, like the case we had yesterday, where a chaser that's not normally rented out. This master wasn't going.
This master is not rented.
Fine, this master wasn't planning to rent out his eved. Okay, if he would regularly rent them out, then yes, of course it would be.
He has to regularly rent
it out. Has to be, because we're talking about there's nothing else for the eved to do right now. That's the point.
And he even does the guy a favor. The guy,
you have an eved that belongs to you, and I'm using it, and you could tell me, you know what, you're going to pay me 5 or 10 zuz.
No, that's Zenen of Zalei Chaser. I have the ability to tell you can't do that. I have the ability to tell you I don't want you to do that. Just as if you live in my chaser without permission, I have the ability to kick you out.
Right.
I do not have the ability to charge you rent if I otherwise wasn't going to be renting out the place anyway, because that is Zenen of Zalei Chaser. You're benefiting, I'm not losing.
What am I benefiting?
You're benefiting that you have a place to live. I'm not losing because...
No, with the eved.
With the same idea. That's what we're saying. The owner is benefiting that his eved is not learning to be idle. And the other... Well, rather, okay, even if he's not benefiting, whatever, the benefit offsets anything that the eved will have been weakened by the work. So therefore, he comes out even. He hasn't lost anything. The other guy has gained because he has an eved to do work for him. And therefore, that should be fine. Then end of Zalei Chaser. On the lay, so Rava tells him, fine, that takes care of the Gezel problem. But what about the Ribbis problem? Fine, that only works, though, when the one who's using the Eved is not owed money by the owner of the Eved. Mar, but you, given to but here the case is that these people owe you money and therefore you're taking their Eved and making them work for you. Mechzik Ribbis. Then in that case, it appears like Ribbis. Because now you're getting something extra from them that you wouldn't have otherwise had. Yeah. The Amr of Yosef Amin Yumi, Amr of Nachman. Like we said yesterday, as Rav Yosef Amin Yumi said in the name of Rav Nachman, even though it is true that usually when you live in somebody's chotzer without his knowledge, and again, it's a chotzer that's not normally rented out, he does not have to pay him rent because then none of his other chotzer. But but if you lent him money and now he's living in a chotzer, then he does have to give him schar, because otherwise you have the problem that it looks like ribbit.
It's
by the way,
David is not
it's like, he lent him money. He lent people money previously.
Right.
Now he's using the eved. That's the equivalent of living in the chotzer. By the way, we said yesterday there were two lashonis on it. One was that it only applies if he made it up at the time of the halvah. The other is even if it's after the fact, if he goes into the fact that Rava is going according to that lashon shows the post can say that the halacha is like that lashon. And indeed, you're not allowed to even if it wasn't prearranged, even if you're doing it ad hoc now. Yeah. Okay. Amalei. So Rabbi Yosef Bahama says to Rava, you're right, Hadribi, you're right, I take it back. I'm not going to do this anymore. By the way, though, the poskim do point out, we don't see that he's saying, I'm going to reimburse them for the amount that I use the eved for. From this we learn, they say, that in the same thing, as far as living in the chotzer, you're not allowed to do it because it's like ribbis. However, it's not real ribbis d'oraisa. It is only, after all, ribbis d'rabbanan. There may be scenarios where it's ribbis d'oraisa, but in general... certainly, if it wasn't prearranged, then it's only Dirabonon. And we learned the other day that Ribis Dirabonon is not Yotze B'dayonim. There's no legal obligation to return it. There's just, if you want to, you can. Therefore, the same way over here, Rabbi Yosef Achama is not obligated to return that money. Therefore, he doesn't say, Mahadrinin Lohu, I'm going to return them the money. He just says, Hadribi, I take it back. I won't do this kind of thing anymore. Okay. I'm going to buy it.
If the owner asks him for compensation,
Zenen of Zalei Chaser. That's what we said. Just like if he lived in the chaser all this time, never mind the halvah, then he's not entitled to compensation because all this time it was Zenen of Zalei Chaser. The only reason that would make it different, the only reason that would make it also now is the problem of ribis. But again, it's only ribis d'rabbanan. Ribis d'rabbanan is not something, avak ribis is not something where you have any legal recourse to get it back. Therefore, you don't hear either. Okay. I'm going to buy it. Suppose you have a person who is owed a zuz of ribis by somebody else. So obviously we're talking about the original arrangement was made illegally because he's not supposed to be collecting ribis. But let's say they made such an arrangement. Now what happens at the time when the loan is taken out, the price of wheat is 4 grivi, or griva is another word for a saw, 4 saw are going for a zuz, the shuka, in the marketplace.
Right.
Yeah.
Is like a zuz?
A zuz. The griva is a saw.
Okay.
So 4 saw of wheat are going in the marketplace for 1 zuz. The yoyla iu chamisha. Now, this loiva instead gives him 5, which, so what does it come out then? It comes out on the face of it that 4 out of those 5 saw that he gives him are in payment of the ribis, and the fifth one is sort of an extra thing on top of that. It's not prearranged ribis. It's not ribis tzutzah. It would be ribis d'rabbanan then, if anything. So what happens? Ki matkinin minei, when we go take from the malva the ribis that he took, because as we said before, ribis tzutzah, ribis d'raisa that was prearranged is yotz v'dayonim. It can be taken away by the dayonim. How much do we take away from him? Abam up kinin minei. We take away 4 from him. We make the malva return 4 of those 5 saws to the loiva. Idach, and as far as the fifth one, oizulehu dekomoizu gabe, then we say that it's just effectively the loiva has given him a discount. It can't be considered ribis d'araisa because it wasn't prearranged that he's going to give him 5 saw, which would be the equivalent of a zuz and a quarter. The arrangement was he was only going to give him a zuz. That extra quarter zuz, that extra 1 saw, represents ribis d'rabbanan. Ribis d'rabbanan can't be taken away, but they on him. On the other hand, Rava Omar, Rava says no. In a case like this, chamisha matkinin minei, in a case like this, we actually do take all 5 away from him. Not that everything is deraisa, because all of it all came as a package deal. When he took it, it was all meant to be in payment of ribis deraisa. True, he overpaid him, but nevertheless, the fifth saw gets dragged along with the other 4, and therefore all 5 of them are going to have to be returned in a case like this. You don't split it into two parts.
So we're saying all the 5...
So all the 5 will have to be, when the dayanim go and then judge the case, they will make him return all 5. Yeah. Because we'll say, effectively, what it is, in other words, we don't consider that the loiva gave him 1 zuz worth of wheat, which is 4 sa, plus an extra quarter of a zuz, which maybe was a gift or something like that, which would be ribis d'rabbanan. No, we say that the loiva revalued, he decided to value the wheat at a lower price of 5 sa to the zuz. So therefore, he's giving him all 5 saw in payment of that 1 zuz. So that's what we're saying. He effectively gave him a discount.
That's
all 5
of the fact.
That's what I wasn't saying after the fact. We're saying when the dayanim are going to take it away. Okay. V'omer Rabbaya, another din, similarly, Rabbaya says, Hayman demasik abba zuzi d'ribis b'chavre. If you have somebody who is owed 4 zuz of ribis by somebody else, again, where it was done illegally, but let's say it happened, the Yovla Glimma Begavayu, and the other person, instead of giving him 4 zuz in cash, gave him a garment, which is worth 4 zuz. Ki Mapkinin Minei, so now what happens when we take away the ribis from this malva? Again, it's ribis d'araisa, so we're going to say that the dayanim are going to take it away from him. Arba Mapkinin Minei, we do take away from him 4 zuz. Glimma Le Mapkinin Minei, but we do not take the actual garment, because we consider it, effectively what we consider it is that it's considered that he bought that garment with his 4 zuz of ribis. The sale was a sale. We're not going to undo the sale. So we'll make him pay back the 4 zuz that he shouldn't have taken.
Why
but
not
we're not
garments?
Because the garment itself is considered to be something. It's considered a separate thing. He gave him the garment in payment, but the original arrangement wasn't that he was going to give him a garment. The original arrangement he was going to give him 4 zuz. So if he instead gives him a garment, you can argue that what it is effectively he sold him the garment for 4 zuz. So fine, it's 4 zuz that he has illegally because it was ribis. We'll make him reimburse them to the loiva, but we won't take the actual garment from him.
We cannot say it's a ribis the ribis.
No, it's
ribis the ribis. He's giving, on the money that was considered ribis, he's getting extra ribis.
No, he's not getting extra. It's the same 4 zuz. It's just in the form of a garment instead of in the form of cash. Instead of, again, the loiva had borrowed $100. He comes back now and says, and then the arrangement was at the time, you're going to pay me $104. So instead, when it comes time to pay back, which was ribis, ribis sutta, ribis daraita, sure. What happens when he comes to pay it? He gives him $100 in cash, and he gives him a shirt which is worth $4. What we're saying is, effectively, it's the equivalent of as if he gave him $4 extra in cash, which is ribis, and then the malva turned around and said, "I don't need the $4 in cash. I want a shirt instead. So here is $4, and sell me a shirt."
So the shirt is to give
so the shirt is not. The money was ribis daraita. The shirt is considered something that was bought with ribis daraita. So therefore, mechaikayim. Therefore, the sale is a valid sale.
Buy with ribis daraita. Wait a minute. You're saying ribis
daraita. We're saying that the dayanim eventually can take that money away from him. But as long as they haven't, it still is in his reshut. Until the dayanim take it away from him, it still is money that's in his reshut. Yeah, that's what we're saying. According to Abaye. Wait. Rava Omar. Rava says no. Glima mapkinimine. Actually, we do take the garment away from him. My time, now not really because it's true. Rava agrees in principle what we have here is a sale. So in principle, he should not have to give back the shirt. The problem is, my time, because you do not want people to be saying to look, this garment, this shirt that he's wearing is a shirt that came from ribis. You don't want people to be saying that, and therefore,
where came the shirt off my back? No, well, wait a minute. It may make come from your back, but the fact remains that it's a shirt that is coming from ribis.
The fact that it came from ribis is neither here nor there. If Reuven steals money from Shimon, where there's no question that the money is in his hands illegally, and then he's toying it with Yirush and Shinui Rishus and Shinui Maisen and whatever, all the various things that we talked about in Bava Kamma, and then he uses that money or goods or what have you to buy something else, the thing definitely belongs to him, right? He has to reimburse Shimon for the amount he stole from him. Same thing over here. So both Abaye and Rava agree with that concept. Rava is just saying, the fact is, you don't want people to be looking and saying, hey, you know, ribis may not be so bad after all. Look, this guy's wearing a shirt that was bought with ribis. Which, by the way, leads the Poskim to say that, therefore, Rava would only say that with something, with a dover mesuyam, something which you see, it's recognizable that this is something that was, that this is right. Something that was bought with
it's
ribis.
A carrot.
If it was, for example, what?
A carrot.
A carrot. So he ate it already, yeah. But yeah. So whatever, if it's not a dover mesuyam, if it's something which is not, it's not used in public, or the thing itself is fungible or whatever, you know, it gets used up or whatever, then Rava would agree with Abaye that in that case you're not obligated to return the actual object. So yeah, okay, you know, yeah, fine. If you gave him a box of detergent for the $4, let's say, yeah, then that wouldn't be considered a davar masuyam, and therefore he can go ahead and use that, and he just has to reimburse the $4.
Because
nobody would think, nobody looks at it and says this comes from ribis.
Amazing that. The money that is ribis money is considered valid for a sale.
But that's what it is. It may have come to you, Be'isur, but now it's your money.
And we get that from where?
That's how it is. Something came to you, Be'isur, but now it's yours, and you're obligated to remember it. Yeah. I'll tell you, actually, you know, on the side over here, it has a reference to a Gemara and Tmura. There is actually a long and detailed machlokas over there between Abaye and Rava, which touches on this issue also. In general, they discuss the question throughout Kola Torah Kola. When the Torah says don't do something, if you did do it, is what you did considered to have validity? Is it that, you know, okay, the thing has been done, now you have to bring a korban or you have to do whatever, or not? Or has the Torah undone and said, so when we get to, in a couple of years, that's the Shem, when we get to Masech Tzmura, we will go through that in great detail. So let's leave it for now, but yeah, you know, yeah.
Okay. In other words, it's a valid question.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right?
Right. Okay. Onward. Onward, Rava. Hai man demasik treza zuzi di ribisa b'chabre. Now let's go up. Now first we started, he's owed 1 zuz, then 4 zuz, now we're up to he's owed 12 zuz of ribis. Now, so what the loiva does is he says, instead of paying the 12 zuz of ribis, what I'll do is I'll rent you out a chotzer, I'll give you a chotzer to live in for free, which we said in our Mishnah you can't do. But demetagra basara, usually such a chotzer would rent for 10 zuz for a year, let's say. But what he does is the loiva and the malva mutually agree, even though normally such a chotzer would only rent for 10 zuz, we'll consider it as if the normal rent is 12. You'll get to live in that chotzer for the next year rent-free, and the loan will be, and we'll assume that the ribis is paid off, not the loan, the ribis is paid off with that. well, kimak kinin mine. Well, again, eventually the thing comes to Basedin, and Basedin forces the malva to return the ribis that he took. How much are we forcing him to return?
10 or 12.
10 or 12. Treisa makin mine. Yeah, well, because ribis deoraisa.
But before also it was ribis deoraisa.
And we said money he has to return. We're talking about if he bought something else with it.
No, but yeah, you, that's exactly well,
that's exactly what we're talking
he
about.
He bought the shirt, but he returns the money.
He returns the money, exactly.
But my question was just that: why does money?
Because
the money has to be returned, but not the shirt.
Exactly, because the money went into his rishus. He just has an obligation to return it. We talked the other day. You know, we mentioned even we had the shitter of the Ramban in understanding Rashi that even the mitzvah to say of returning ribis is not really directly tied to the lois that they're taking it. It's not really. We learned over there the possibility that's not really a lot on this class.
Right.
Yeah. So okay. So kimak kinin mine. So when we take the ribis away from this malva, treisa makinin mine, we will take away from him 12, not 10. Omelet of Achim edifti the Ravina. So Rav Achim edifti asks Ravina, why? The lemale, why shouldn't the malva have the ability to say ki agra hachi? The reason why I was willing to effectively overpay for it, to say that I'm willing to forfeit 12 zuzim of ribis for this chotzer, even though normally it would only rent for 10, to have a kamashtashili. The reason I was willing to do it is because I'm gaining from it. Like this, I had ribis that I'm collecting. And fine, I figured, you know, instead of collecting the full amount of ribis, fine, I'm willing to accept a little bit less. I'm willing to accept 10 instead of 12. I'm willing to accept something that ordinarily would be worth 10 and will value it as being worth 12. But over here, in the end, it turns out I'm not gaining because basically it's taking away the money from me. Why should I be held to that? Let's go back to, we should consider it that I've rented it at the same price everybody else usually rents it, which is 10. And therefore, that's all I should be obligated to pay. Effectively, all I did is end up taking 10 for ribis instead of the 12 that we prearranged. So why am I being made to pay 12?
Well, he paid 12. He accepted.
They agreed at the time that there's going to be 12 of ribis. Right. At the time alone, they agreed there's going to be 12 of ribis. Later on, the malva says, you know what? I'll take instead. Well, I'll live rent-free in this kotzer for a year, which normally would be worth 10. Now we're saying we make him give back 12 of ribis. Why? On the face of it, he only got 10 out of it. It's as if they renegotiated the deal. You should consider it as if they renegotiated the deal. And instead of 12 of ribis, 10 of ribis, and all they should be taking away from you is 10. The answer is mishum da'amalei sabras v'kablos. The reason why that doesn't work is because the loiva can say, yes, but you knew about it. You knew that you're taking 10 instead of 12, the kablos, and you accepted at the time that you're willing to consider this chotzer as worth 12 zuz for the year. So now the fact that Basedin is taking away from you the money from you doesn't change the fact that at the time we made this agreement about the chotzer that you were willing to accept it as worth 12 zuzim. So you don't have the ability to renege on that now. It does have to be considered as if you actually got 12 zuz worth of ribis, and then you took that 12 zuz, let's say, and bought something that usually would only sell for 10.
But that he didn't. He accepted just 10.
But that's the point. In other words, it's as if that we have to consider, because he was willing to accept something worth 10 instead of 12, it's the equivalent of having taken the $12 and get the 12 zuz in cash, and then turned around and said, I want to rent your chotzer, which I'm willing to overpay for renting this chotzer. That's effectively what it was. And therefore, he got 12, and therefore he's made to return 12. Mishnah says.
Because the real price of the chatil was 12.
Because the usual price would be 10, that's what we're saying. But he was willing to consider it as worth 12. And besides, you know, we learned in the previous paragraph, there's no arna when it comes to karka, so it's not like the fact that he overpaid 12 instead of 10, it's not like he entitles him to any recourse as far as the dinim of arna either. Yeah.
How can you say arna on ribis?
That's what I'm saying. Even if you could theoretically say no, you couldn't. You can't anyway. Okay. Mishnah says, "Marbin ala scharve in marbin ala mecha." You're allowed to charge more when it comes to a rental for the fact that you're not getting the money right away. That in marbin ala mecha, but you're not allowed to do that with a sale. You're not allowed to say that because you're prepaying, you're going to get a discount. But you're allowed to do that with stews. Okay, son. Hisku lo yitzchatei, right? So what's an example? If a person rents his chotzer to somebody else, va'amaloi, and he says, if you prepay me now at the beginning, then you can have it for 10 sloim for the year. But if you're only going to pay me in monthly installments, then I want to sell up per month, which is going to come out to 12 slayim, 13 in a leap year. Mutter, such a thing as mutter, for reasons which we'll see in the Gemara. The fact that he's giving a discount for prepayment is not considered ribis. It's not considered agar neser, for reasons which we'll discuss in the Gemara. On the other hand, mochalay sadehu. On the other hand, if he sells in his field, he sells in his field, he says, if you're selling it to me as of now, if you're giving me the money as of right now, then you can have the field for 1,000 zuz, im legoden, but if you're going to make me wait for the money until the season when the grain is in the granaries, when then you're going to have grain available to sell, and then you'll raise the money and pay me. In that case, then I want to charge you 12 mana, which is 1,200 zuz. Also, such a thing as also. That would be considered agar neser, the fact that he's giving him a discount at the beginning.
By waiting,
he's gaining from the fact that the buyer is gaining from the fact in that case, because he's prepaying and not get because he's prepaying, he's he's getting an extra benefit. He's getting less than he otherwise would. That's agar neser. And vice versa, also, if the other guy is getting more for the fact that he's waiting to get paid for his field.
Let me ask you a question. You take a subscription.
Subscription magazines, let's talk about in the Gemara. Of course, the Gemara is not going to talk about magazines, but we'll see concepts in the Gemara which will bear on that. Remind me when we get to the end of the Gemara. Wait, it's actually not so simple as far as magazines.
It's not the same thing.
Hold on. Okay, so Gemara. So what's the difference? Why indeed are you allowed to give discounts and then whatever for prepaying on a rental but not on a sale? Incidentally, by the way, it's interesting that the Mishnah starts off with the case of renting out a chotzer and then continues with the case of selling a field. The Tosfos Yom Tov says the svara behind it, the reason why the Mishnah presents it that way is because if a person has a choice, if a person is short on cash, you would expect him to rent out his chotzer. You wouldn't expect him to sell it, as opposed to his field. He may well sell when he needs money. Okay. So Rabba and Rabbi Yosef d'Amitavayim. So Rabba and Rabbi Yosef both say the reason why it works is like this: Schirus ena meshalemet ela b'sof. When you rent something, the rental payment only becomes due at the end of the period. Now, this is one of those kinds of, well, this is not, this is one of those things that depends on Hilchos Medina. I mean, nowadays when you rent an apartment, it's usually understood that you pay the first of the month. Minigamokim overrides these kinds of things. But when there's no specific
minigamokim, you pay at the end.
Yeah, that would be an example.
No, but that's not a time-related...
No, but the point is that ordinarily when you rent somebody or something or whatever, the rental only becomes due at the end of the period.
Wait, how fast do you eat?
No, come on. Tosfos discusses a little bit the connection or lack thereof of what we learned something in Kedushin about Yeshna the Spirit and the Skill of Adsoif or not, but when we say when a person is hired out for a job, do we say that each bit of work that they do earns them another pruta, or do we say that it becomes due as one lump sum at the end? Tosfos says the two things are not really connected because
where do we have that?
We had that in Kedushin. One thing, in Kedushin.
I knew it's far away enough that I barely remember.
Okay. So one thing it came up in connection with, you're doing work for a woman, you're making, for example, rings or jewelry or what have you for her.
Yeah.
Can you be Mekadosh her with the value of what you made? We discussed it over there. If you say Yeshna Lutskirus Mitskilabat Sai, it means each little bit of work he does earns him another prutta. At the end there's less, so each of it gradually becomes a milva. At the end you have less than a shavah prutta. You can't be Mekadosh the mill, you can't be less than Makadosh with less than a shavah prutta, therefore nothing doing. Whereas we say, that the whole amount becomes due, he only earns the whole amount at the end. But first it discusses, that's not necessarily the same thing as the discussion over here. Here we're talking about, okay, at the end of the term, whatever it is, whether the guy walks off the job in the middle or whatever it is, when is the actual fee due? When we talk about a Yeshna L'Skiris Mitzvah about Tzoy, fine, we mean that he did the first bit of work, he's owed one prutta. He does the next bit, he's owed another prutta, etc. But it doesn't actually become owed to him until he either finishes the job or walks off it. So that's what the Gemara is saying over here. Here we're talking about that that angle of it, that only at the end of the term, or if the agreement is broken off earlier than then, only then does the schiras become due. V'hai, so in this case, kivindalen motas mani l'migda, so in this case, since the actual time for collecting hasn't come yet, because he's saying if you prepay me for the rental at the beginning versus the end, a lot of agonetter, then there's no agonetter, there's no gain that he's getting for the fact that he prepaid, because really he didn't have to prepay anyway. He didn't really become obligated to pay until the end. So on the contrary, mishvahu dehaki shabya, on the contrary, the real value is considered to be what he would have to pay at the end, namely if he paid month by month, where he'd end up paying twelve sloim. The fact that he's willing to give him a discount for prepaying and saying that then you can get it for 10, fine, he's giving him a discount. There's no agar netter over here. He's not gaining anything for having waited. Right.
For being early.
Yeah, which is not the same thing, On the other hand,
cannot be considered ribbis.
So it can't be that sort of thing. It's not ribbis. On the other hand, Sefer, kivin de zvini ninu, but in the second case, since we're talking about a sale, uboi lemishkel domi me'achshav, and when it comes to a sale, the money is supposed to be paid right at the time, at the time of the sale. There's no concept enel of a sof, that the money is only going to become due later. It's supposed to be due right now. So therefore, if he's giving him a discount for prepaying, then that's agar netter. He's gaining for the fact that the owner of the field is gaining that he didn't have to wait to receive his money, he's getting it right now.
And for that he's giving, and therefore
it's also.
As opposed to the previous case,
where in other words, the difference is, when it comes to schirus, you have the term of the schirus, and at the end the payment comes. With the selling a field, it's the other way around. The payment is supposed to be at the beginning. The farmer is saying, I'll give you a choice, you can prepay, you can pay now at the time of the sale, which is when you're supposed to pay, or you can pay later in the season, but then you're going to have to pay more. As opposed to with a schirus, where it's the other way around. Paying before you become liable to pay for the schirus versus paying at the time when you're supposed to pay. There's a difference of whether you're...
It's always due at the end.
It's always due at the end, as we said. Schirus ain't a mishalom, it's all of a sudden, yeah.
And it's the opposite of it.
It's the opposite, yeah.
If you pay at the beginning, you're still having a discount.
You're having a discount, but it's not a discount which there's no schar hamtonas mois. You're not gaining anything for waiting to be paid. Well, let's put it this way: in the case of the schiros, the owner of the property is not gaining anything for waiting. He's not gaining anything for waiting. No, he's not.
He's getting the fair price,
and he's saying, but if you prepay, then you can get a discount from that fair price, and that's fine.
It's the accounting. Yeah, but that's still gaining. Getting money today is more valuable than getting money.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But
that's a gain. You would very much think it is.
No, the gain that we're talking about when we say agar netto is that you're gaining, that you're getting more money or more goods or whatever than you would have otherwise. On the contrary, he's getting less at the beginning. He's getting less for a prepayment than he would have than he would have at the end. He would have gotten the full value.
Agreed, but who says that ribis is only when you wait? It's when you have a benefit.
Not necessarily
by waiting. It can be when you get money early on.
Agar netto means that you're gaining something tangible. We're not talking about the time value of money. You have to keep in mind also the time value of money. A large part of it is based on the fact that you're able to invest that money and earn ribis on it. In an economy where ribis doesn't play a part, There's much less of a difference. I mean, there is still some difference between money now and money later, whether you have it to spend now or whether you have it to spend later, but it's more of an intangible thing. That's not what we mean by agar netto. Agar netto means when you have an actual, there's something tangible. You're getting some tangible money or good or what have you that you would not have had otherwise, that you would not have had otherwise.
I'll give you an example. I hear what you're saying, but we've seen the case that when the market fluctuates, the fact that he has money now in a fluctuating market is a
problem. The problem with Poskin Alaperis and all that business,
is not that you're gaining from the fact that you have the money now. The problem is that later on, the price is going to fluctuate, and the buyer is going to end up with more goods than he would have otherwise as a reward for having waited to take delivery. That's agonetto. He's gaining an actual tangible. He's getting an actual tangible good. He's getting more value.
Wait a minute, counting. Instead of you can charge the exact same thing with Sirius, the prices might be lower now than they will be in 3 months.
When you're renting a property again, you have a normal amount that such a property would rent for. You have a normal amount it would normally rent for 12 zuzim for the year. We're not talking about that in a few months it may go up to 15 zuzim. We're talking about this is the kind of property where on a long-term basis the expected rental for it would be 12 zuzim a year. So in that case, he's not gaining anything extra by being prepaid. He's giving him a discount. It's like you said, sort of the opposite of this. All right, let's go on.
That's true if prices don't vary, but if they do vary,
we're not talking about if they vary. We're talking about when the amount that you can expect to get for the rental of this property is fairly fixed.
It's going to be $1,500 by the end of the year, and now it's $1,400.
So then you're talking about locking in prices. That's a different matter. That's price get all paid. That's a different matter. We're not dealing with that over here. We're dealing with that, but it's not. It's not. Two different things. Amar Rava, Dokubar Rabbanan Baha Milsa. Where do we get this that we said that Schirus Ein Mishtalimus Elo V'Soif, that the Schirus only becomes due at the end? The Rabbanan checked into this matter, V'Oikmu Akra, and they figured out a pasuk from which you can derive this idea. The pasuk says, Kishir Shana B'Shana. The pasuk says, by an Eved Ivri, that he should be like a worker who's hired year by year,
right.
Meaning Schirus Shoshana Zu, Ein Mishtalimus Elo V'Shana Akhara. We derive from that, we darshan from that, that the pasuk is telling us the rental or the hire, whatever, the price you pay, the amount you pay a hired worker for this year, it only becomes payable next year. So there you see it. In other words, if you hire a worker by the year, then the time when you're obligated to pay him is when that year is over, at the beginning of the next year. So there you go.
When you get a job, you get a paycheck after your first month, don't you?
That's an example of Sirus Amish Shalom Zalav Zayk. Yeah. Okay.
And if they say, I want an upfront payment, then they'll give you a 10% less than they would have given you at the end of the month.
Right. All right.
The same thing.
Yeah.
But that's the opposite of Ribbis.
Okay.
They're losing because.
All right. Let's move on. The Imlagurin Mishneh Masa Mona Asa. We said in the Mishnah that when it comes to a sale of a field, that if you're saying, I'm willing to sell it to you for 1,000 now, but if you pay me only later in the season, they'll pay 1,200. We said that's Asr, because then you have Agar Neser. So, Omer Rav Nachman, Tausha Shori. So Rav Nachman says in this connection, a Tausha agreement is allowed. Tausha, Rashi says, is where you say you are charging more for the fact that you're getting paid later, but you don't tell him so. You don't tell him that I'll charge you less if you pay now, and I'll charge you more if you pay later. You just charge him the higher price without specifying, which the poskim point out. Tosfos points out on Amud Beis, and all the other poskim say the same thing as well. This would only apply to something where it doesn't have a known price. If it's something that has a known price, even if you don't tell him, it's blatantly obvious that you're overcharging him for the fact that you pay him later. So that would be awesome. But we're talking about something that doesn't have a known fixed price, custom made. So then it would be mutter, because there's no agar netzer because he's not saying I will sell it to you for less if you pay me now. Okay. I guess Rami and Rav Ochu were brothers, I don't know. Whatever. One of them asked the question to Rav Nachman, what about our Mishnah v'im l'gurin Mishnah masamana also? What about our Mishnah, 1,000 versus 1,200? Amalei says, Hasam Katzle, the difference is that in the Mishnah he specified it. He said that I'll give it to you for 1,000 versus 1,200, as the case may be. Hachalei Katzle, whereas in my scenario, he's not telling him anything specific. Therefore, that would be allowed. By the way, the word tausha, a couple of the Meforshim have a bit of a time with where, how does the word tausha come to mean this kind of agreement anyway? One explanation, I think it's from the Ramban, is that tausha means death. So in that sense, it's like a death agreement because you didn't specify, he didn't say anything. And then the Meiri gives another one also, that tausha means like high rock. So like he's raising the price because the guy is paying him later.
He was very young when he asked Rav Nachman.
Rav Nachman and Rav Chista are colleagues, so young, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Amar Rav Papa, Tausha Didi Shari. The kind of Tausha that I do, Rav Papa says, is allowed. Now, Rav Papa was a brewer. He made beer for a living. So,
That's why we brought this.
He would sell people. Now, beer is usually brewed around Tishrei time when the dates are harvested.
We're talking about date beer.
Date beer, that's the common kind of beer in those days. So it usually it's cheaper in Tishrei when it's first made. It reaches its full price in Nissan by the time it's matured, by the time it's fermented, whatever. People would prepay him in Tishrei according to the amount that it's eventually going to be worth in Nissan. And then they would wait until Nissan and then they'd pick up the beer. So if in Tishrei it's worth $10 a barrel, and by Nissan it's going to be worth $15, they would pay him $15, and then they would pick it up in Nissan.
They would pay him $15.
They'd pay him $15 at the beginning.
The full price.
Keshar shal Nissan. Now she says, yeah. So Rapapa says that kind of agreement is allowed. Why? My timer. Shichroi loipopi. Because on the one hand, from my point of view, the beer is not going to go bad. Therefore, in other words, it's not like I could just as well have waited until Nissan. Zuzi like Tzirishna, and furthermore, I'm rich. I don't need the money. Usually when you sell something when you get prepayment at the beginning, it's because you need funds, sort of like what you were saying a few minutes ago. Rapapa is not in that situation. Therefore, So on the contrary, therefore, I am doing a favor for the Lakeach, that I'm allowing him to make sure that come Nissan, he will have a supply.
Can you say Enlo? He made good beer.
What do you mean Enlo? He has it right now, but that's not...
Has it gone out? He's going to have it in Nissan.
He brewed it in Tishrei, but...
He brewed it in Tishrei.
But if you wait until Nissan,
you won't get it.
You won't get it because everybody else will have already gone and bought it. So like this, I'm doing them a favor. Enlo is when you're... That's poiskin ala peiros. You're making a prearrangement that I'm going to buy.
It's a bit
at
like
the current
watermelon. They're not ripe, but they exist.
Here it's the other way around. Here it's not again. Here Rapapa is telling them that you need to pay me the full price now. It's not actually so. It's a little bit different than the Tausha that we were talking about before, where we said that that's what it is. Sorry, the Tausha over here it is. What he's saying to them is, if you pay me right now cash on the barrel head now in Tishrei, fine, you can get it for 10. If you're going to make the agreement with me, and then you're only going to actually pay me in Nissan when you pick up the beer, then I'm going to charge you 15.
But so he was taking less. So it is rebus.
No, wait. That's the Tausha that we just said. So that's the thing, because he's saying usually when you do a Tausha, the reason why you're willing to offer a discount is because you need the cash right away. I don't need it. I don't need that cash. So there we go. Fine, but why are you looking at it only from your point of view?
Right, exactly.
Look at it from their point of view. If they had money available, they would have been able to get, according to the cheaper price, $10 a barrel. And now, because they don't have money, now they're being made to pay the higher price, the amount that will be worth in Nissan. So it's not like Rav Nachman's Tausha where you're not specifying anything. It's more like the case of our Mishnah. You're saying the difference between you and the seller of our Mishnah is you don't need the money. Fine, from your point of view, maybe it's not an issue of ribis, but from their point of view, it should be.
Opportunity cost.
And it is ribis. So now Rav Chama says, here's another possibility, Tausha didi vade shari. My kind of Tausha is definitely allowed. Now, what's his kind of Tausha? Rav Chama used to do like this. He would sell goods. Now, you had goods which in one place are worth less, and in another place they're worth more. And in modern terms, they call this arbitrage. So he would take goods that sell cheaply in one place. He would sell them for a higher price, the amount that they fetch someplace else. He then
pre-sell
them. He sells them according to the price they will take someplace. No, he buys these things cheaply.
He resells them at a price that they at the price that you could get for them someplace else. Then what he does is, these people that he sold it to, he doesn't get the payment from them on the spot. They take that merchandise someplace else to one of those other places where it'll sell for a higher price. They sell it over there. Now what we do is he arranges with them that on the way there, if anything happens to this merchandise, I will eat the cost. It's still considered to be in my possession until you actually reach your destination and sell it. Then what they do is they reach their destination, they sell it for that higher price. Now they've covered the cost that they agreed to pay Rav Chama ahead of time. Now they're on their way back. They take the money that they got for selling that, for selling those things, and on the way back they buy other merchandise with it. And they bring it back from the profits, yeah. And then they use and on the way back the achrayus is on them. For anything that happens to the goods that they bought, the achrayus is on them. So that's the tarsha over here again.
Cost of goods, obviously.
Well, again, the key thing over here is that Rav Chama is saying, again, if they were to pay me the original amount on the spot, I would have given them the cheaper price. And then they could take that merchandise to wherever it is and sell it for more, and then make a much larger profit. Like this, they're being made to pay me, like this the deal is, they have to pay me the full cost that it would that it'll fetch in that other place, or maybe a little bit less than the cost, so they can make a little bit of a profit, whatever. But the difference is, it's still considered in my reshut. It's still, I'm the one who's going to be liable if anything happens to it on the way. I'm the one who's going to have to eat those costs. So therefore, he says that's allowed. My timer. Now, the problem with it is you would think that the problem, now, so the problem with it might, you would think, is not so much the tarsha issue, not so much the fact that they're paying more for it at the beginning. Rather, you would think that we're saying, since it's in his reshut. The problem you would think with it is there's another issue which we're going to discuss later on in the parak in connection with Iska, is you can't have that you lent somebody money, or in this case, they owe him money, which amounts to the same thing, and in return, they're doing him some kind of service. So on the face of it, they're effectively borrowing money from him against this merchandise. On his behalf, they're going and taking it elsewhere and selling it and bringing him back the money. Why don't you have that issue? Shouldn't he have to pay them for that service to avoid the issue of ribis with that, which is how that's dealt with in a heter iska, which we'll deal with later in the parak. Now, the reason why that
money for a service is considered
if you lend money to somebody, or for example, you invest in his business, and he then goes and manages the money and earns a profit and whatever and gives you some of that profit, if you don't pay him for his work, you have a problem of ribis. Because effectively what it is you lend him money, and in return for that, he's giving you the service of managing your money and then earning a profit with it. That is a problem of ribis. That's one of the things that...
Can I consider this as a sale of a service?
No, because it's related to the original loan. It's the actual money that you lend him. So here it's a similar kind of thing. He lent them money based on this merchandise they're going to buy. The difference is, though, that over here, nichalahu deleku birshusi, they benefit from the fact that these goods that they're taking elsewhere are considered in my rishus, and even from the fact that on the way back, the stuff that they bought with the profits is also in a certain sense considered to be in my rishus. It's not totally because he doesn't have a chrayus on it. But in the sense that people still look at it as one big transaction, they still look at them as shluchim of Rav Chama. Why? Because this way, wherever they go with their merchandise, on the way there and on the way back, they will exempt them from taxes and tolls, because in those days, Tzavar Chachamim were exempted from tolls and taxes, as we will learn in Bava Basra. The Nakit Lahu Shuka, and also they will hold the market for them. The rule was also, we'll also learn about this in Baba Basra, the rule was when a Talmud Chacham came to town with merchandise, the rule was that nobody else is allowed to sell that kind of good until the Talmud Chacham has finished selling his stock, and that way he can go back to his learning as soon as possible. So over here, when these guys effectively are acting as agents on behalf of Rav Chama, they gain that. Therefore, they don't specifically have to be paid for their work to avoid the problem of ribis. That itself is their pay. The fact that they don't end up having to pay tolls, and the fact that they're able to sell their merchandise in a seller's market before everybody else is sold. So therefore, that kind of tarisha is allowed. Okay, so the Gemara says the hilchos of Rav Chama. Bottom line, the halacha is indeed like Rav Chama, that his kind of tarisha is allowed. And since we're mentioning the halacha, like Rav Kama, the Gemara, by the way, mentions the halacha about a couple of other things that we left outstanding earlier in the perek. The halacha is like Rav Elazar that we discussed at near the beginning of the perek about ribis susa yotze b'dayanim, that ribis d'oraisa is something that can be taken away by the dayanim and reimbursed to the loiva. The Hilchos of Rabbi Yanai, and one more thing, the halacha is like Rabbi Yanai, Domim Mali Hein Mali Dmehen, which we had a couple of days ago, that Rabbi Yanai had said when it comes to Amona, when it comes to prepaying for Peiris, that you're able to afterwards get the Peiris themselves or Dmehen or their equivalent monetary value, and it's not considered ribis. So the halacha is like it. With that said, we said over there on Daf Samach Gimel, we had a machlokas in Tosfos, what that means. Is he allowed to take actual cash? Or does it just mean he can take a different kind of merchandise, but it still has to be merchandise rather than cash? The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is like that opinion, that he can take other merchandise, other goods, other than what they agreed on originally, even if it's worth more now. However, he's not allowed to take actual cash, because that would really look like ribbon.
So he can take the merchandise, it's worth more, and he can resell it, and it's on ribbon. It's
fine, but at that point, that he received merchandise, it doesn't look like ribbon, at least, when he has. But it's not, because it's all, again, remember, it's only ribbon to Rabban. It's only ribis d'rabbanan.
It's only in cash.
No, it can be in merchandise as well. But at least when you have that, he originally arranged, I'm going to prepay for X amount of payers, and later on, instead of getting those payers, he gets other payers, which by that time the price of them has gone up. That's fine. We said, Rabbi Yana had said, mali hein mali d'me. Such a thing is allowed.
If he arranged for £500 and he gets.
Now he arranged for five. He arranged in terms of money. He arranged, I'm getting $500 worth of wheat.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, later on, when it comes time to pick up the wheat, instead, the other guy tells him, I'll give you instead wine. Where by that time, the value of wheat has gone up, and it would be worth 600, so therefore I'll give you 600 worth of wine.
But it's still fictional ribbons. I mean,
but it's not. That's what we said. Rabbi Yana had said that it's not. And that's what we said.
On the basis of,
because he is entitled to get the wheat. He would be entitled to get the wheat, and because, and that's not considered ribbis. Therefore, by the same token, he's allowed to, instead of the wheat, get something else. So again, we had Rabbi Natam said over there he'd even be allowed to get the 600 in cash. Rashbam disagreed with that and said only he can get goods, not cash. The halacha is like that.
Goods
only. Tosfos says, by the way, when we say here the halacha is like Rav Chama, as far as a tarsha, doesn't mean to say the halacha is not like Rav Nachman, that a generic tarsha is offered. A generic tarsha where you don't specify anything is indeed mutter. All the Gemara means halacha is like Rav Chama is to say, however, the halacha is not like Rav Papa as far as his tarsha with the beard. That whole thing doesn't work. But the halacha, Tosfos says, is like Rav Nachman as well as like Rav Chama. An unspecified tarsha is mutter, and a tarsha of the specific type that Rav Chama did, where he has responsibility for it until it's sold, is also mutter. There are Rishonim who disagree with Tosfos on that. Okay. You were mentioning magazine subscriptions. Real quick, I'll just mention, there is actually a good deal of discussion among Achronim about, are you allowed to offer a magazine subscription where you're saying if you prepay, you'll get them at a discount, and if you don't, then you're going to have to pay full price. Some of them actually say there could be a problem with that. That would be like our Mishnah. That would be the 1,000 versus 1,200, and you have a problem. There are others of them who find various aterims, such as, for example, that this way, I was talking before about tangible versus intangible gain. The seller of the magazines, for example, may have reason to offer a discount because, for example, that way he's guaranteed. He knows that he knows how much his print run is going to be for the year. For example, he knows that it's not going to be 1 month he's printing 1,000 copies, and next month he may have to print 3,000. That sort of thing. It affects his ad. It affects how much he can charge for ads. Those kinds of things. Therefore, that might be reason to allow that kind of thing.
Because what?
Because it's not necessarily are we saying that because on the one hand it's true the subscriber is gaining something from the fact that he's paying for the fact that he's prepaying he's getting more magazines, he's getting more bang for his buck.
It's not a tarsha
because the tarsha is you're not specifying. Right. Here you're specifying the cover price per issue is $5. But if you take out an annual subscription,
so
instead of 60, it'll be 50. So it would be like our Mishnah. It would be similar to our Mishnah. If you prepay me, then you're paying $1,000. If you pay me at the end, Lagurin, then you're paying $1,200. That's what we said in the Mishnah. It's ribbit.
The reason, again, the logic behind the heter, according to those who are master it, is that the publisher has the publisher himself has is getting a benefit from getting prepaid, not but the benefit is an intangible one. The fact, for example, that he knows how much his print run is going to be for any given month. He knows how much is, you know, how much he can charge for ads, that sort of thing. The fact that he has a guarantee.
One part of
so
it.
That
the second part is that
the agro netter would have been on the part of the subscriber. But we're saying it's offset by the fact that the publisher has a certain gain from it.
The subscriber probably wouldn't buy every magazine for the entire year.
Yes, he would.
Well, it depends on.
I'm sure he would.
No, he might. He might not. But that's not the point. The point is that the publisher.
Right. What if he would?
The publisher knows that now he has it's a guarantee. He has
he's cost.
Yeah.
Maybe that's his cost.
Okay. So that's what we're saying. Then therefore, what amount?
So you can't subscribe to a newspaper?
No. There are other considerations. No, there are other considerations as well. Yeah.
But if it was tzadechad, then it would be for sure.
Tzadechad, the halach is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Tzadechad is a different issue. Anyway.
So why are we saying it's authorized and it's not ribis?
Because we're saying that the same way as we said with schirus in our Mishnah, that's allowed, the because on the contrary, it's not that he's overcharging for paying later, it's he's undercharging for paying earlier. It's somewhat similar over here. He's undercharging for paying earlier because he's gaining from it, that he knows how much he's going to be expected to print, how many issues he's going to be expected to print per month or whatever.
Right.
He's gaining, and therefore that offsets the gain that the subscriber has by paying less.
If he gained nothing,
If he gained nothing, then it would be a problem. I will mention, by the way, I mean, it's going to be mired of time now, but I will mention an interest. I was looking in the art scroll has a whole book out called the Halachos of Ribis, where they discuss a lot of these contemporary issues. One thing they point out is actually that there is a whole discussion that Moshe Feinstein says that actually corporations are not subject to a certain extent to the laws of ribis anyway, because you don't have any one person who's liable. The whole idea of the corporation is that you have the corporation's assets. No individual is liable for
it's a non-natural
person. Yeah. What? It's not a natural person. What?
Does
no,
it have to be a natural holder. The shareholder is a natural holder.
But fine, but the shareholders, the definition of a corporation is that the shareholders are not liable for the company's losses. They don't have to pay it out of pocket. That's the whole idea of incorporation in the first place.
Depends on
so therefore,
type of corporation.
We're talking a normal corporation. It's a normal corporation where there's
limited liabilities are not. Or
I
see corporations are.
Okay, I don't know about the difference. I don't have any head for business. I don't know. But the front end, a limited liability then. Right.
Okay.
So that's another layer of it also. If you have a magazine that's published by a corporation, as many of them are, then you have a further heter involved. Okay.